Hello, everyone. I'm Amanda Balbi, Associate Editor at Consultants and Consultant360.com. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Daniel Fearer, who is an Associate Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at the Icahn School of Medicine at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. Dr. Fearer is the senior author on the study Shedding of Hepatitis C Virus into the Rectum of HIV-Infected Men Who Have Sex with Men, which was recently published in Clinical Infectious Diseases. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Fearer. Can you walk us through your study?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. The background for this research is that although hepatitis C has traditionally been considered a bloodborne infection, it was recognized by some groups in Europe and our group then in New York in the early 2000s that HIV-infected men who have sex with men were acquiring hepatitis C, and these men had no known parenteral exposures, such as sharing injection equipment or blood transfusions, even though our blood supply has been without hepatitis C for some decades. And in discussing the possible risk factors with them, it was suspected that this infection was acquired during sex. This was quite a surprise to many, and the question that has been on my mind since then is, what are the body fluids that were responsible for bringing hepatitis C from one to the other and the acquisition of hepatitis C through sex? The epidemiology has been investigated by a number of groups worldwide, including ours in New York, and we published a collaboration with the Centers for Disease Control in about 2011, showing that the main risk factors in New York for acquiring hepatitis C were actually having ejaculation into the rectum, and that led us to our investigation of hepatitis C in semen, which we published earlier this year, finding that hepatitis C was present in semen of about a third of men who had hepatitis C and HIV. And this was not the first finding of this sort. In fact, an Australian group had just published that similarly, and a number of groups have published that hepatitis C is present in a variable proportion of men, in the semen of a variable proportion of men, over the last number of years. But in talking to the men I have taken care of who have acquired hepatitis C during sex, and looking at the careful epidemiological studies of my colleagues around the world, it was clear that while that may, this, the hepatitis C in semen may explain a majority of the acquisitions in, at least in New York, there were others that were not explained by this. And I hypothesized that there would be hepatitis C in the fluid in the rectum, and that this hepatitis C could then be brought from one rectum to another during sex in some ways, for instance, sharing sex toys without cleaning them in between, and in group sex settings where they could be on a fist or on a penis that was either not covered or the condom or glove was not changed in between partners. We therefore devised a simple pilot experiment where we asked the men who were enrolled in my observational study of the trying to understand the transmission of hepatitis C. We asked men to undergo a simple rectal swab, and we chose men who had either a recent hepatitis C infection, because that's one of our other strong interests, recent meaning really in the first few months of infection, and men who had had hepatitis C for a longer period of time. We collaborated closely with my colleague, Dr. Michael Geisa, an author on the paper, who is interested in human papillomavirus and anal health, and we used his expertise at high-resolution anoscopy to be able to then look at the rectums of the men after we did the swab to make sure we hadn't disrupted any rectal mucosa and caused any bleeding that could mislead our results. So we just took a fresh swab, moistened it to as a lubricant, and passed it about 7 centimeters into the rectal vault, and really using the same technique that we use to test for sexually transmitted infections, and the same swab. We then removed that, inspected it for any visible signs of red blood, and put it into a transport medium, and were able to do the standard clinical test in collaboration with our Mount Sinai Hospital Laboratory, whom I must thank strongly for supporting this research, and in the standard viral load testing, we examined the levels that we found from the fluid that we had swirled the swab around and after removal. What we found was a fairly striking result that we looked at 45 men. We got results from 43 of them, so very the only two results were just negative because of technical reasons. And out of the 43 results, 21, just under half, had a measurable level of hepatitis C. In fact, only one of those had any visible blood. It was a man who had actually come in with a complaint of rectal pain and had some rectal bleeding. So there was blood that was known, and that level on that swab was pretty close to the level that he had in his blood. Otherwise, of the half of men who had detectable hepatitis C, the chances of finding hepatitis C in the rectum depended on the level of hepatitis C in the blood. In other words, the higher the hepatitis C level was in the blood at the same time as the rectal swab had been taken, the more likely we were to find hepatitis C present in the swab. And this was highly statistically significant finding. In addition, when we looked at the magnitude, and we're just examining the magnitude, not only is it more likely to be found if the blood levels were higher, but the actual level in the rectum was higher in men who had higher blood levels. This was more obvious in our study than it might have been in others because, as I had mentioned before, we were looking at some men who had very recent infections. One of the characteristics of recent hepatitis C is a strong immune response, and many of the men have actually lower than usual viral levels in this early hepatitis C period. So if we were just looking at men who had chronic or more established long-standing hepatitis C, which represents the vast majority of those who have hepatitis C, and certainly in clinical practice, everybody would be taking care of men who had chronic hepatitis C. Those levels are higher, and if patients had a blood level of a million or more, about 85% of those had detectable hepatitis C in the rectum. Our conclusion from this is that hepatitis C is shed into rectal fluid. We don't have a direct demonstration that this virus is infectious, but considering the levels, we believe it prudent to consider that, until proven otherwise, that this would be infectious. We also believe that this does explain how hepatitis C can be transmitted by other mechanisms, what are known as fomite. A fomite is an inanimate object that can carry a pathogen from one place to another. A sex toy, for instance, would behave as a fomite in this scenario, but I describe this phenomenon as penis as fomite or fist as fomite. These are animate objects, obviously, but in this sense, in this capacity, they behave quite similarly. And so this is penis as fomite, bringing hepatitis C from one rectum to another. Well, the conclusion from this clinically would be a fewfold. One is that men who have sex with men need to understand that there's hepatitis C in the rectal fluid of men who have hepatitis C, therefore can acquire it during sex if that fluid from the rectum is brought into their rectums. And this is similarly true of semen. That's not the discussion that we're having right now, but it's important to inform men that they could acquire hepatitis C from somebody who has hepatitis C from having semen in the rectum or rectal fluid brought into the rectums. And the rectal fluid can be transferred by any object, animate or inanimate, that's been in one rectum and then not cleaned before bringing into another rectum. This is probably a low efficiency transfer. The levels are 1/1000th, possibly 1/10000th. It's somewhat of a range, And it certainly can be up to perhaps even one-tenth that of blood. And so it's much less efficiently carried. It's probably significantly less efficient than the group of organisms that I call professional sexually transmitted organisms, such as syphilis and gonorrhea, and HIV is certainly in that group. So hepatitis C is likely to be less infectious, but nonetheless, I've seen quite a number of these infections. And so infectiousness is just one element in the transmission chances. The other is how often the exposures happen. And so multiple exposures will then magnify even a small risk. The important thing is to bring this to the attention of the men at risk. Equally important, or in this case it's going to be more important, is to bring this to the attention of the primary care providers for the men who may be at risk. We are the group who will then tell our patients in general, and so this is an important conversation to have. Then we just remind everybody to take a sexual history and to ask if you find that you are speaking with a man who has sex with men, and find out whether there are sex toys used or group sex is occurring, to be able to counsel about the risks of acquiring hepatitis C in this setting.
And how do the results of your study affect primary care providers?
Primary care providers, in particular those who take care of men who have sex with men, should incorporate this information into how they counsel these men about sex and the chances of acquiring hepatitis C as one of the now sexually transmitted infections. I would note as well that in this study, we did study just men who had HIV and hepatitis C. We did not study HIV uninfected men who have sex with men who had hepatitis C, and we do not know if the results would be the same. For now, specifically, I can only say that this is something we found in HIV-infected men. It is theoretically possible they may have higher levels than men in the rectum than men who don't have HIV, although I would say as a general caution that I would assume that the phenomenon probably does occur, but we don't have evidence to say that specifically from this study or any other study. I would note also that this is the first study of its kind. There is a conceptually similar study from a German consortium who looked at hepatitis C in stool and found that hepatitis C was commonly excreted into stool and that the concentrations that they reported were not that much lower than in blood. I can't speak to their methodology, but I think this is a compelling parallel description that hepatitis C could be shed. And although it is probably unlikely to be infectious in the fecal-oral route, they may have found something parallel to what we found, that we would expect hepatitis C to be present in the rectum.
And in your conclusions, you mentioned that a public health awareness campaign is needed to educate this population. How would you go about developing such a campaign, and whom or what organizations would be involved?
A public health campaign ultimately is the most effective way to get information disseminated most widely. Individual providers telling patients is very important, but is inefficient comparatively. The largest public health organizations in this country, the Centers for Disease Control, for instance, and the recommendations about sexually transmitted infections from the Health and Human Services would be the optimal organizations to discuss these things. They are currently involved in other work in hepatitis C, the large outbreaks through injection drug use that seems to be having a resurgence in association with opioid injection. I have not depended on these groups, therefore, for practical reasons. I am in the process of trying to develop such a program association with large national organizations who are advocates for LGBT groups. One that I would like to mention in particular is the Human Rights Campaign. We are trying now to develop a national campaign for awareness of the sexual acquisition of hepatitis C, which in and of itself is something that is poorly recognized at best, even among these men at risk, HIV-infected men who have sex with men, and possibly HIV-uninfected men who are having sex with HIV-infected men. This is not well known. That is, the risk of sexual acquisition is poorly recognized by the men at risk. It's fairly poorly recognized by primary care providers to these men outside of some urban areas, such as New York City, where I work closely with a large number of HIV primary care physicians and other healthcare providers. Their awareness is higher because they've seen these infections, but I think that outside of the large urban areas, this is not understood to happen. And I'm hoping through your podcast that this wonderful organization that we can bring this information now more widely.
Great, I hope so too. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Dr. Fearer.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.